Once, before the coming of the Persians, the Aegean had been a Greek lake. That winter of 481 BC, however, the Aegean sea lanes swarmed with vessels from every corner of the eastern Mediterranean. 13 years previously, at Lade, the last fleet of a free Ionia had been swept off the sea. Now, with the invasion of Greece itself only months away, the contingents that had contributed most notably to that crushing victory for the King of Kings were back in Ionian waters. Any Greek would have recognized them with a sinking heart. Slim, shield-hung, and sublimely manoeuvrable, the triremes that would constitute the shock force of Xerxes' fleet had a deadly reputation. The sailors who manned them were universally acknowledged as the most proficient in the world. They came from the city of Tyre, from Sidon, and from Byblos, from any of the great merchant strongholds along the seaboard of what is now Lebanon. Proudly independent of one another, each city may have been, but the Greeks lumped all their citizens together as one single perfidious crew, Phoenicians. Yet many Greeks shared with these merchants a taste for turning a profit, and profoundly resented the competition that the Phoenicians gave them. No matter how far they travelled, no matter where they sought new markets or raw materials or land for a trading post, those celebrated sea rovers, those sharp dealers, the holds of their black ship filled up with a hoard of flashy trinkets, seemed always to have got there first. This rivalry stretched back centuries. The Phoenicians, their cities quite as hemmed in by mountains as were those of the Greeks, had always set their sights upon the open horizons of the sea. As far back as 814 BC, it was said, the Tyrian princess Elissa, leaving her homeland, had led a great party of colonists along the coast of North Africa, until, arriving opposite Sicily, she had founded there a new city, or Carthage, destined to become the greatest metropolis of the West. By the time that Euboean colonists, a few decades later, began nosing their own way westwards, the tentacles of Phoenician trade had already reached Spain. Soon they were extending even further, into the Atlantic and towards the equator, to beaches fringed by jungle, where the Carthaginians would trade with impassive natives for gold. The Greeks, an envious gleam in their eyes, had found themselves, by and large, too late on the scene to gatecrash the African market. And yet, although frozen out of Africa and Spain by the sophistication of their rivals' commercial networks, they too had discovered in the West a frontier ripe with opportunity. Soon enough, throughout Italy and Sicily, there was open confrontation with the Phoenicians. And, as ever more Greek settlers arrived looking for a new beginning, so the sheer weight of their numbers had begun to tell. On and on they had come, from Euboea, from Corinth, from Megara, from Ionia, a flood of maritime colonization unsurpassed in scale until the discovery of America more than 2,000 years later. By the turn of the 8th century BC, a new city was being founded in Italy or Sicily virtually every other year. Certainly by the time that mass colonization had finally trickled to a halt in the mid-6th century BC, the Wild West was semi-tamed. The Phoenicians, who had provided the Persians with the bulk of their fleet at Lade, had already profited hugely from the destruction of Miletus, a city once as much of a commercial hub as Sidon or Tyre. Were Athens to be flattened in a similar manner, and the neutralization of Corinth and Aegina secured, then the prospects for Phoenician business would glitter promisingly indeed. As a result, the Phoenicians brought 300 ships with them to the Aegean for the Great King's War, more than the entire fleet of Athens.